What are you thinking about with Gary, too? A half hour or hour or just see how it goes? Rich? Hello?
Yeah, we're supposed to be on. I can't tell if we're on right now.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I love this. I love this new technology here. It says we're live, but nothing's playing.
Hmm.
If anybody can hear us, please call in. Let us know we're on the air. 347-457-3535. Do the intro again, see what happens. No, but we probably just drove somebody crazy.
Huh. Well, another interesting start to the night.
Not a good night for this going on. I tell you what, I'm going to jump over on Twitter real quick, or Facebook real quick. If somebody's out there, jump in our group, post, shoot me something in the Facebook group. Let me know if we're on or not. There we go. That's professional.
Yeah, that's the way newfangled technology works now. So let's see, go to this site here. So for everyone, if you can hear us and you actually host the show on Blog Talk, we'll say this. Try to figure out the new board because it's a big pain in the ass.
Yes, it is, and you can feel free to email us and let us know how to do it, or actually you can sit here and run it for us. I hate this stuff. It was working last week.
Yeah. So for everyone. Oh, there we go. Good. Well, so we are actually on right now.
We are on.
Let me check the echo. Yep, that's me saying Blog Talk Radio is a pain in the ass. There we go. Fantastic. So...
Actually
no intro needed. It's like Chris Candido, you know? No gimmick needed. No intro needed for this show.
All right. Well, welcome to Ringside Rap. I have no idea what the hell's going on at this point.
This is how you stumble through everyday life. At least I do. So, you know, it's like a new adventure everywhere you turn.
Absolutely. And, of course, we wait on Les Thatcher, who kind of just joins us whenever he wants to. And I'll go ahead and put it out there. We're supposed to be joined tonight by Jerry Jarrett. That's assuming if we can get him online. Not sure what's going to happen here to the board as we go forward. He's going to be plugging his book, The Best of Times, that just came out. You can get that. You can go check that out and get some ordering information at MemphisWrestlingHistory.com. Or JerryJarrett.com, I believe, redirects there. That book just came out. And he is going to be in Atlanta for you local folks, Georgia Wrestling History fans. We're going to actually do something tonight, and, well, we hope we are, if the board cooperates. We're going to actually give away some passes to the Plaza Theater in Atlanta. In August, the movie that everybody's been hearing about, Memphis Heat, which is... I would consider it quite successful for being a documentary film and a small budget deal. Had a good run in Memphis. I believe it's played in Nashville as well, possibly some other cities. It's going to be coming to Atlanta the first weekend in August, which is also the same weekend the NWA Legends Fan Fest will be here. And we're going to be giving away tickets each week up until that in conjunction with little partnership we've got with the Plaza Theater. Got some connections there, and we're going to make sure that at least two people a week can get in there free. We'll give you some more information on that later about how you can take advantage of that. I believe we're probably going to be joined by somebody else. Don't know who that is, but I hear there's supposed to be some kind of run-in here in the first half hour. Hell, maybe that'll be less. Maybe we can qualify him. This is a run-in at this point.
Maybe he's called in and the board ate him up. I'm not sure yet, but the figures are typically wacky start to the week, and especially we expected all three of us to be here for one. First time in a while since that's happened. So, but I know we talked about it last week a little bit, and I don't know if you had a chance to catch Raw this Monday night. Did you have a chance to catch it? And what did you think of the McMahon involvement and this? And where they're thinking about going with CM Punk, or where they could be going with CM Punk?
At this point, I'm as confused as anybody. I really thought that they were gonna make sure they signed him at the last minute, or make this work somehow. Maybe even just draw it out, because I know he wants a break. I know that is part of the reason that this whole thing came up, was he just needed a break. Whether or not they do some sort of stick around for one more pay-per-view kind of deal or what, I don't know. But I can tell you that I think the thing in Australia that happened over the weekend, which I'm sure we're going to get into as well, I don't know. This might be the best time to go ahead and let him take that break.
I still think, in my gut and heart say, yeah, he's probably resigned. The way the whole thing went down, because if you think about it, it's not like, I mean, Christian was going to TNA, and there was a pay-per-view coming up, and I think it was like a six-pack challenge or something like that, but I remember him being in the ring with Vince McMahon and some other guys on the last Raw he would have been on, and they were calling somebody back to the ring, or they were challenging somebody, and, everybody knew he was going to TNA, or it was at least his contract was expiring at that point, and they didn't replace him, they used him, and he went in there. Jeff Hardy, the same way, even though, he lost on his way out the door. Punk, I think, honestly, he's probably re-signed. Obviously, I think he's going to need to take, significant time off. Not significant, but at least a while off. Now, God knows they should have did it with Cena and Nexus and all that, and they didn't do it. And who knows if they'll do it here, but I think he does need time off, and it would be coming at a pretty good time under the circumstances of basically using a, a gay slur, the short for homosexuals, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out what he had said. We won't do it on here, but it's one of those things, and it's going to sound, and I don't know how you feel about this, and I know how hypocritical this is going to sound. It shouldn't be said, can't be said anymore, just flat out. The NBA all sports are doing, commercials about these sort of things. Grant Hill is in one of the, I know is in one of the PSA commercials about, that's so gay, and using terms like that, and I'm not gay, but obviously those who are do find offensive and find annoying, and they don't like it, and it shouldn't be said. Now, with that said, anybody that's played a sport, and again, this does not make it right, but there is locker room type stuff, and that's always been one of the things, well, just saying a homo or calling somebody gay, and those types of jokes in the military and sports, it has been something that has been around for a long time. And again, it's not to try to excuse it or sound hypocritical about it, but there is a culture that the jock mentality culture where you do throw that stuff out there, and you don't mean it in the way that it's said. It is meant as just a dig on somebody, but at this point, it's an unacceptable gig, but again, it doesn't shock me when an athlete says it. If it was a politician, if it was somebody in Hollywood, it would even be worse on top of, and again, not to excuse it or anything like that, but when it comes to athletes, as far as getting over that hump and that bend, it's going to be a lot slower than in other aspects of life. It just is, and and again, not to excuse it or anything like that. Now, with that said, on top of that, I think Punk did the right thing. Obviously, he had to apologize for it. I'm sure he was probably going to apologize for it. I mean, I know he can be, reportedly a real prick. But, realistically, he knew it. He knew it. And it's just one of those things where you got to apologize for it. I think he did it in the best way, because it wasn't some BS thing where it was a form letter type thing that, well, okay, when you screw up, say this. They probably told him to apologize. I think he probably would have apologized anyway, but I think he did it in the right way of, look, hey, I screwed up. I'm a douche. I'm a jerk. I take responsibility for what I said. And he did it in his words. And now, frankly, this should probably be the end of it. Now, I know the Michael Cole thing and the Glad thing, and there's a little bit of an issue there. That's for WWE corporate, if we were going to discuss that. But as far as CM Punk goes, this isn't something where you're going to drag him and hold him over the fire for the rest of his life or his career or anything like that. I think he did the right thing. He apologized for it, and that's it. And I think it's an issue that probably, hopefully, when it comes to discussion on CM Punk, you know, should be dropped.
Agreed. I mean, you know, we've all on the record or live or in a bad situation or in the wrong scenario. And I hate to even say that. I hate to say it's in the wrong place because bottom line is it's just wrong anyway. But we all say things that we know, you know, after the fact, probably would be hurtful statements if you were saying it in front of somebody that definitely would be offended by it. I mean, the thing is, if you even, like, so much as question what you're saying, obviously you went too far with something. But, yeah, kudos to him for getting that quick apology out. I just hate to see this whole thing come back and bite WWE in the ass at some point because, you know, this is, what, the third time, I believe, this kind of thing's come up since the I guess, what do you call it? What do you call it that they got going on with GLAAD? What do you call that?
Well, I think it's
a working arrangement going on there.
Well, yeah, I would say it's just like a general working agreement sort of thing. I mean, it's not like the National Guard. They hype that up a little bit more in some of the work. But, I mean, they work with lots of different organizations, too. I mean, Make-A-Wish and the military being the biggest two that you could point out. But they work with a lot of other groups. So you have to when they want to expand out and you're doing what they're doing as a entertainment company and, you know, as an entertainment entity and a business entity. I mean, you do work with groups like that. And they got GLAAD a couple, you know, well, it's more than a few years ago now with the Billy and Chuck wedding when they did that whole thing and they had the gravy boat and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, they immediately blow that up. You have the hot lesbian action thing that, you know, met with 3-minute warning, just, you know, breaking a girl's ribs. You know, that nonsense that took place there. But, you know, I think GLAAD overreacted a little bit with the Fruity Pebbles thing. I mean, I think that was a little much, but it does show the changing of the times. But then Michael Cole dropping what essentially is the F-bomb now. But, you know, it was a complete and utter idiot in doing it, you know, in response to Josh Matthews playing the heel. And I don't really think even – I don't think initially really comprehended – you know, one, it's hard to read sarcasm and stuff like that anyway, you know, so, and to do it the way he did it was dumb, and then you have Punk, but, you know, it's, again, I know WWE at the end of that thing made sure to put in there that, you know, Punk's an independent contractor, but, you know, nobody's going to view it that way, but you just, that's when you have to sit down in the locker room, just very simply, you know, we're out there, we got kids, we got, you know, 8 to 80, you know, blind, crippled, and crazy, and gay. So try not to insult those people because there's really no need to. It was an old school thing. I mean, if this was 1986, you know, if this was 1996, it would be different, but it's not. It's 2011. And it's just one of those things that they social mores, everything changes. And, you know, when it comes to that sort of stuff, probably it's really not that big of a deal. And it's probably something that it's good it changed.
Well, I got to say this much. I think it's great that they're working with the gay and lesbian crowd. They need to work with the straight crowd at least on Thursday night because I tell you, as a person trying to watch TNA, I am deeply offended. I believe this may be somebody that we were expecting to maybe do a brief run in here. Speaking of straight guys, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Hello.
Brutal Bob Evans?
Hey,
well,
how'd you know it was me?
I was going to intro you, but I didn't know for sure what the nature of your visit was going to be, so we just figured we'd give you the mic and let you go.
Well, I figured since Semper Vivi gave such a piss-poor review of the pay-per-view last week, I figured because he couldn't even bother to watch the whole show, I guess he figured that after me and Bennett, that was pretty much the whole show, so he turned the rest of it off, you know. So,
yeah, you know, I agree with that, and I was deeply offended with the way that Jay Lethal comes in there and starts to interfere with your action. That was absolutely unneeded. I'm shocked, although I'm more shocked than anything that Mike Bennett did not listen to you. You told him not to go up to that top rope. You told him not to waste time, and he did. So hopefully he learned something in all this.
I think everyone else who was watching that broadcast heard me yelling and screaming about it, and he was the only one that didn't. Unfortunately, he's the one that counted. So how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing all right. Fantastic.
It's Rich and Mike, and we're less tonight.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, yeah, we're – no, I just wanted to give you guys a quick call. I'm sorry?
I think he's just afraid to tell me he quit.
Oh, geez, well. You get a lot of guys down there where I work. A lot of that happens. There's just no show and all that stuff. I was telling Semper Vivi about it before. So, but no, I actually, getting back to the wrestling business, just wanted to give you guys a quick call and kind of give you an update as much as I can with the Ring of Honor situation because, you know, I know you guys have always been big supporters of the company. And let me tell you guys, and I am no company shill. In fact, I am still not under contract with Ring of Honor, and that's kind of a mutual decision, and no, it's not bad news, it's good news. The fact is that, as Mike knows, and I think as you know, Rich, I have a lot of personal responsibilities and a lot of work responsibilities, so I can't contractually be at every single Ring of Honor event, so we figured it would just be best for me to just make appearances at this point. So I am not a company shill. I am not a Sinclair Broadcasting partner, so I can give my honest opinion on everything, but actually, guys, it looks awesome. It looks phenomenal. The feeling last weekend or 2 weekends ago was nothing but positive. Sinclair is in. This is not a Ted Turner TBS situation. I hate to say Ted Turner, but I mean, you know, the goofs that screwed up, you know, the WCW. That this is not what this is all about. This is a serious, very excited. We met just about every employee in the company. After we did the press conference, we went down to their building, met all the employees, and we thought it was going to be like three secretaries that were forced at gunpoint to come meet us. And actually what it turned into is about maybe 100, 150 employees pouring into this conference room, very excited about meeting us. No one looked down on us. I think that was the biggest thing that the boys were shocked by, was that we were actually looked at as stars already. We were already perceived as an important asset. Sinclair Broadcasting. So things couldn't have gotten off on a better foot. So
when you went up there too, and obviously, you know, they had the press conference, they brought you guys out and everything.
Sure.
You know, before all that, I mean, who were you introduced to as far as quote unquote Sinclair execs, and have you been told, or I mean, what are they expecting? Were there any little nuggets from that we didn't get to see at the press conference or anything like that about, you know, what the intentions are or what, you know, just any little nuggets coming out of it that we haven't heard about?
Well, really, the press release was very thorough. They're kind of an open book right now. There's nothing. I don't think there's really anything, maybe dollars and cents that I'm not privy to either, but as far as their goals and their plan is basically what they said they're going to do. They're going to run mostly Saturday nights, the best time slots they can get. And we were told that very conservative estimates would put us at being seen by 500,000 people. And that's if we don't do well. So, and that was just kind of ballparking it, but, you know, that... But they showed us the time slots, and there's a lot of cool, awesome wrestling towns in there, guys. Now, granted, it's not New York, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, but it's Nashville, it's Paducah, Kentucky. There's a lot of neat wrestling towns in there.
Oh, all throughout the Carolinas, I thought was pretty impressive.
Absolutely. I mean, and people were kind of rolling their eyes at the list, but... The thing that you have to go, as far as the impression I've been given is, I think people are taking this the wrong way. We're not trying to jump in and compete with Vince. We're trying to take a step forward, and we're trying to take what Sinclair Broadcasting has for strengths and taking what Ring of Honor has for strengths and putting them together and just running the markets that we can run in. Like, because I don't know if you guys have obviously gone to some live events. Once you go to one of our live events, you're hooked anyway, just because the wrestling's so good. And now that they've kind of rounded out the roster and made it, in my opinion, a little more entertaining, no offense to the guys that came before us, but I think it's a much more well-rounded product. I think we have a little something for everybody. And now you're bringing it to good wrestling towns anyway who are starved for wrestling. I just think it's going to be – I think it's going to take off running. You know, obviously we'll stumble a little bit along the way, and but I'm very optimistic, and I mean, I'm, you know me, guys, I'm an optimistic guy anyway. So I'm sure somebody can come and do the point counterpoint thing, but from everything I heard, there's a bunch of very sincere people, very smart people. I got to meet Gary Juster, which is actually a thrill for me because I've heard his name so many times throughout the years. And Joe Koff, the guy who's kind of spearheading the whole Sinclair side of it, is a real driven guy. He's a sales guy, so you know he's optimistic and you know he's goal-oriented. I'm excited about it. I mean, and then we got to do a bunch of, like, local, hey, Paducah, Kentucky, you're watching on channel such and such. It's coming up. Ring of Honor TV's coming up. It all became kind of real to us, you know, because we did all the stuff in front of the green screen, and we're actually in a Fox News station in Boston, in Baltimore. You know, it was real neat. You know, it was... It hit me hard that week where I was like, this is the real deal. These guys aren't screwing around.
Now, did they tell you at all that there is there going to be, because we heard, okay, you're not going to run Los Angeles, which does make some sense because there's no TV there. You seem to
and now they're not running Plymouth, which breaks my heart. They're not running Plymouth, the best building we have. Just because there's no TV there. You know, they want to run as much as they can in front of the TV stuff, but they're not going to ignore Chicago, New York. I mean, those towns are great, you know, so.
Well, and they're purely going to follow TV outside of those, because I was looking at it, it's like, you know what, Toronto, Buffalo, the Carolinas, you're on TV in places where you have at least some kind of foothold, or people would at least be relatively familiar with you because you've kind of run it in areas close to that. As far as the studio show goes, I mean, have they given you any timeline, or is it just going to be let's get to September and kind of see what happens?
They told me they have a plan as far as running live events. It seems like it's going to be a fairly light schedule until the beginning of the year. As far as they're going to do TVs, and this is nothing. I'm not really talking out of school because this is obvious. I mean, you look at the list of events and there's really not that many there. We were told Toronto was something that was going to be looked at more towards the beginning of next year. I think they're really trying to do this intelligently as far as keeping an eye on TV. You know, let's shore up TV. Let's make sure TV's great. Let's make sure I'm assuming, and I don't know this, that the next pay-per-view is in December, but they may do one in the fall. I don't know. But it's I know they're already making plans for December for the pay-per-view. And I know the TV issue is one that's going to be addressed, because there were a lot of issues with TV last time as far as lag time. They don't want 2 months in between TVs. They want TV to be fresh. They're going to do a lot of different things with TVs. They did sit-down interviews with just about everybody on the roster, and I'm talking lengthy, half an hour, 45 minutes, Kevin Kelly sitting down, interviewing myself and Mike, interviewing Tommaso Ciampa, interviewing Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. You know, this is stuff that's going to be seen interspersed through the TV, I would imagine, and it all came out great. It's going to really be a cool addition to the show. So they're putting a lot of time and effort into this. This is not going to be three squash matches, a 10-minute TV main event, and see you next week. This is going to be a very well-put-together program. So,
now, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to a whole lot of guys. I know you talked to Mike and some other people.
Sure.
Numbers came out for, at least obviously the estimated numbers came out from the last pay-per-view, which... Well, and basically, it doesn't matter what the numbers were. All everybody's saying is the numbers were higher. How stoked is everybody over that? The fact you didn't have any TV, the fact that, you know, it was a situation where people knew Homicide wasn't going to be there, or, you know, after, you know, that night. It's just little
right.
things all up and down the board when it came to it that people were kind of looking at about it and were, you know, kind of feeling hesitant about. How stoked were the guys you talked to afterwards, and the fact that, again, number one, it was a raging success as far
sure.
as the entertainment provided for $15. I mean, again, double that price it would have been worth. And I know I sound like a show here, but you know what? That card from up and down, including the main event, which I did have a chance to see, the four-way tag and everything up and down, and Steam coming back, was again
yep.
great. It was great value. How stoked was everybody that, again, not only did you have a great show, but it really paid off in the fact that, you know, again, significant more people without TV dropped their money on it.
I was bear hugged by Jim Cornette about maybe right before the main event, and told that this was the most successful. I know a successful live event. They knew that much because I guess they had counted all the tickets and counted all the money and whatnot. And then they were very optimistic that the pay-per-view was going to be the highest pay-per-view. So I think everybody had a real good feeling going in. But after the show, right after the show, we were all wiping away tears. And then we wanted to make sure that Davey and Eddie were okay because as far as I think they were both, I don't know if they were concussed, but I know they were both sore and hurting, you know. There wasn't much of a entertainment or performance aspect to the last couple minutes of that match. They were both hanging on to get through it. So, you know, like I said, and I'll say this publicly, I wasn't always a huge fan of Davey Richards. At times, certain aspects, which I won't get into, we were all fans of Davey Richards after that. And this is nothing I haven't said privately to him, but I said, you know, I really. You know, not that it means anything, but I was proud of you out there today. I'm glad you had a chance to say what you had to say. It was the right thing to do. That was one of the top 10 sports moments of the year, never mind wrestling. If you know anything about sports or, you know, combat or just, you know, World Series and Super Bowls and things like that, that was one of the biggest things I've ever seen. And Kevin Kelly saying he's been in the business for 20 years, seen everything, and... That was the first time he ever shed a tear at ringside. I mean, just think of the stuff that he's been through. And, you know, it was pretty incredible. And to be there live for it was even better, you know.
Let me play cynic a little bit here, just to throw it out there, because now you're going into, you know, you're going to be on basically was national TV. And I mean, you know, whatever anybody wants to say negative about, national TV, far better than what HDNet was in a lot of ways. And, you know, in fact, in most ways, but... You got the Briscoes and World's Greatest Tag Team look to be the main feud. Should be. Absolutely should be.
Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team. Wrestling's Greatest Tag
Wrestling's
Team.
Wrestling's Greatest Tag
Team. Don't get us in trouble now.
I know. No lawsuits, please.
Yes.
But Davey Richards, now you got, again, people that know him and have followed his story and have seen him, you know, be a, you know, a Benoit ripoff, works, all this stuff to the emotional person, you know, with feeling and background and everything that was really shown last year when he would talk about his, you know, the match against Tyler, talking about his grandparents and all of that stuff, which went so great, but doesn't per se look like a TV star, what a world champion is. Now, obviously, his work in the ring will get fans, but
right.
Is there any pushback in being an entertainment guy? And obviously, this is where... You know, you've gotten taken shots, and Mike Bennett's taken, a lot of people have taken shots at Ring of Honor about, you know, some of the changes that they wanted to make and some of the things stirring it up. Davey Richards, in the reverse of that,
right?
Do you see any problem with him being too pro wrestling, too old school pro wrestling? Does he have enough flash or anything like that to kind of carry the show as the world champion?
Well, I think that, yes, I do, because, and like I said, Mike, you know, and I probably even told you privately, like I said, all that in my eyes went away once I saw that match. They laid everything out on the table. I've known Eddie Edwards since he was 16 and a half. He's one of my favorite people in wrestling, and, you know, Eddie Edwards his star has risen so much in the past 3 or 4 months, and he was supposed to be a quote-unquote interim champion. And the guy, you know, got an A++ in everybody's eyes. It helped make him. I still think him and Davey have a little bit more of a legacy to write together and separately, as far as tag teaming and also facing each other. And yes, I think Davey Richards is the right guy to carry it. But I also think that there are a lot of other people who can do it. I think Mike Bennett can do it. I think Ciampa can do it. I think. There's a bunch of people that can do it. I think Eddie Edwards could do it again, you know. I don't know, if Charlie Haas or Shelton Benjamin ever decide to go singles, I think they could do it. You know, that's the exciting thing about Ring of Honor is it's wide open for us. But, yeah, I think Davey Richards is such a compelling, interesting character, and I mean that in the best way, not as a caricature or a entertainment aspect. I just mean as a character, as a person. I think his story is so compelling, along with everybody else's compelling stories, that I think it'll be excellent. I really don't see that being a problem. I think actually it'll be kind of like a counterculture thing. So, and I mean, if you want to see counterculture work, there's a young man from Chicago that opened his mouth that you were just talking about 2 weeks ago and basically altered the state of the business for we don't know how long. You know, so that's counterculture right there. And now they're talking about possibly, you know, there's rumors that they might build a company around them. So I think counterculture is going to become the new culture, at least for now. You know,
well,
if it's not working, you got to try something else.
You bring him up, and remember when ROH got on HDNet, you know, it was right, Danielson was going, McGinnis was going. Now you go to HDNet, and there's a possibility, or I'm sorry, to Sinclair. Now there's a possibility of, you know, the Kings of Wrestling, who are just still, I mean, that to me, the best tag team in the world. The Kings of Wrestling with the whole package and presentation, they may be going. Colt may be going. Homicide's going. Obviously, you got a lot of talent there. Guys will come in, but what's the prevailing opinion as far as, you know, Colt especially and the Kings of Wrestling, as far as, obviously, you guys are strong enough to, I know you would say, hey, we don't need them, we're going to keep moving on, keep going on, but because of their presence and because of, you know, what they can pull and how popular that they are, you know, what's the locker room thinking right now as far as those guys go and as far as, you know, obviously no one can begrudge them for the WWE money, but
right.
You kind of just, you know, like kick the dirt a little bit and go, damn it, you know, why now?
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing you have to take into consideration. Are we gonna stand in the way of these guys? And like I said, you know more about it than I do, as a matter of fact, and I'm not holding anything back, guys. I just don't. I've been doing a lot of work-related stuff, so I really haven't been that close involved in wrestling. So some of the stuff you're telling me is news, but I have heard that kind of stuff. Everybody was pretty tight-lipped about that because I think they were just trying to concentrate on getting through the event, getting through all the matches. And it's a professional – I mean, Cole and those guys, they're a professional bunch, so whatever was going on, I didn't see it. They had the game faces on and certainly didn't reflect in their matches. But – if there is something like that and they need to move on somewhere else, then, you know, God bless them. But, you know, our job is here. You know, my job is here. I'm here to help Mike. I'm here to help all the other young talent get through, you know, because I'm not just a crazy Rocky guy ripoff, as most people think I am, or cartoony. So thanks, Pro Wrestling Torch. You finally figured it out that I'm cartoony. So I love how they use that as an insult when that was kind of the point the whole time, but it's all right. Let them come up with their own discoveries. So, but as far as, you know, we all have jobs to do and we all have goals in wrestling. And if their goal in wrestling is to do that, then more power to them. It's the biggest company in the world. Right now it's your best chance to become a millionaire in wrestling. So they'd be stupid not to try it. And I think all three or four of those guys are definitely talented enough to hang with anybody on that roster. And I just hope if they go, they get what they want. They get a good break, you know. And I think whatever they get in that company, they'll deserve. And I think they'll do a great job. And if they choose to stay with Ring of Honor, that's awesome too. We'd love to. I'm not kicking anybody out the door, you know. Not that I have any authority to anyway, but you know, I'm just as far as I'm concerned, I'm just grateful for the spot. You know, like I said, I'm just pleased to be a part of something that's gonna be bigger and better, you know. So I'm excited about it. But we'd love to see those guys stay, but if they can't stay, we certainly understand. Give them a kiss and a hug, and the light will be on if they want to come back, and that's it. So I know there's no ill will. I mean, they were smiling and shaking hands, and, you know, there certainly wasn't any ill feelings or tension. There's only tension as far as let's make the show great. That was the only tension I saw. So,
Rich?
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to break in here real quick. I just wanted to bring everybody up to speed with what's been going on here. I want to thank Bob for actually carrying on a conversation with Mike while I was trying to figure out the board. Anybody out there that's actually been listening since 8 o'clock, you're well aware that we've been having some serious issues here tonight. We are, if you did just tune in for the normal featured guest interview slot, we are attempting to reschedule with Jerry Jarrett for a future date, possibly as early as next week. We can do a little reshuffling. We shouldn't want to take the risk on trying to get him in here and that going wrong. as everything we've done tonight, except a call from Bob Evans, has gone awry. So
I can take care of that if you want. I can start with my racial and get the slurs going. We can get some good press. And
do you have anything to hurt Glad?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, why not? Well, sure.
So anyway, I did put it out on Twitter during my break from the air. I put it out on Twitter and Facebook. If anybody's got any questions about Ring of Honor, you're the answer man tonight. So
well, I'm trying. I'm just
we'll see if they call in.
Like I said, I'm going to come across. I'm very positive, and believe me, guys, when I called you or when we spoke, it was very late September, early October of last year, and I told you something big was going to happen, and it wasn't this. It was me and Mike joining on the team in Ring of Honor. I couldn't tell you, and I was excited about it then, and I'm just. You know, the good thing about Jim Cornette is everything he's told me has come true. So that's, I don't know if any other wrestling official has ever done that with me in my almost 20 years. So, you know, that's, I get very defensive of anything run by Jim Cornette. So when I hear, and I love the fact that he's considered the old school guy when he's probably done more trend setting stuff than just about anyone except for maybe Paul Heyman and Vince. So it's, it makes me laugh. Plus, don't forget, Jim Cornette was the one watching the Japanese tapes back in the day when Japanese tapes were barely in this country. So
that's, yeah. And that's, you know, actually a double-headed question kind of wrapped up in one. Basically, what has Sinclair, has there been anything that, like, as a member of the Sinclair Broadcasting Company, which has an NBC affiliate, they're mostly known for their Fox and their CW affiliates.
Right.
What have you, basically in kind of the same vein as CM Punk and the situation that happened, is
probably
there
the only thing CM Punk and I have in common, right? Except we don't drink and do drugs. That's about it.
Well, it's like, what have they given you anything as far as, like, you are now part of this corporate family that has got a lot of eyeballs on it in a way, and this is for a different time. Sinclair has been a relatively, in a way, a controversial holding of TV stations. So there has been eyeballs on them before. They have their enemies that are
right.
A part of the media. Have they told you anything, or was there anything as far as, hey, guys, don't do this, and this, or anything like that, where now that you're a part of a company like that, where they're saying, hey, look, this is, you need to do this to protect our interests?
I think nothing, as far as I know, as far as, like, any kind of sensitivity meeting or anything like that, but it's been basically just, keep in mind you're part of a bigger corporation now. This isn't the Wild West. You have to, there's a certain responsibility. I mean, that kind of stuff, just more in generalities than anything specific, you know. And I don't know if there's anything in the contract. Like I said, I didn't sign one, so I didn't have any reason to read one. You know, Mike didn't ask me to look at his or anything, so it's basically just, going on what the guys have told me, and it's just, there might be something in the contract, like the usual, like if you're a moron, then we have the right to get rid of you, something like that, but they'd be stupid not to put something in there like that. I would do that, too, if I was a company, you know, but I don't think there was no sensitivity meetings or anything like that. I think it was basically just, you know, you guys have made it this far. Can you know just cut the F-bombs down, or don't call this certain persuasion this, or this other certain persuasion this, and we'll all get along just great. So,
oh Lord, the Briscoe boys are going to get fired quick, aren't they?
Well, you know, we gotta keep a close eye. Gotta keep a close eye on those guys, but But we're, like I said, that's why I'm not in management anymore, Mike. You know, it's, we're trying to, I guess there'll be certain people that will toe the line a little more than others, but I'm sure, you know, Jimmy and Hunter have dealt with more people. And, oh, and by the way, too, can I make a public statement, and he'll be embarrassed about this, but Hunter Johnston is not a pencil pusher for Jim Cornette. This is a very 50-50 proposition. The ideas that you love have probably been deliriouses, or Jimmy doesn't yell out instructions and Hunter isn't there with a clipboard and a pen furiously taking down notes and saying yes Mr. Cornette, no Mr. Cornette. It's not like that at all. It's a very good relationship. It's an incredibly creative guy. in my opinion, probably right up there with just about anyone as far as Booker of the Year. I love the creative direction. If I got fired tomorrow, I'd say the same thing. But as far as being two very different people, they work very well together. So I remember they had one disagreement, and I forgot what it was all about, and it was so minor, they were laughing about it. But they're really getting along very well. And let's not, he'd probably be mad at me for saying this, but it's kind of putting him over a bit. But Delirious is not just a guy who nods his head and just takes notes. He's a legitimate booker, so...
Well, it's kind of in that same vein, too. I was going to ask you about it, Sinclair, as far as the structure, as far as the TV goes, if you're going to have an iron claw, they're going to let Jim kind of do it. But actually, really, as far as the TV goes, this is going to sound bizarre, although most people listening to this show are older and have been through the territorial days, with it being basically an old-school style studio show, in a lot of ways, I mean, obviously Jim Cornette is an expert at that. I don't care what anybody says. He's an expert at it. He's done great TV no matter where he's been or been a part of. He does great stuff. Is it going to be kind of, obviously Kevin Kelly's been around a long time. Do you know kind of how it's going to work as far as Jim, like an executive producer, and he's going to outlay things, and then Delirious is going to be the part? As far as what you know right now, and again, this is getting into management stuff and things like that too, but how do you think it's going to break down as far as, how is that going to work? Because there's a lot of big brains there, and this is, it's off a lot of their alleys.
I was told that the wrestling, the creative end of the wrestling was not going to change. Hunter and Jimmy were going to work as a team, two heads of the same snake. Nothing on that end would change. Sinclair would not interfere. As long as we didn't do anything that was, if we set somebody on fire, they might say something. But, I mean, if there was, as far as wrestling angles and all that, nobody, when Kevin Steen came out and said F Ring of Honor, they didn't tear up the contract of ownership of the company and throw it on the ground and indignantly walk out the door. I mean, they were on board. I don't know if they agreed with it or didn't agree with it, but they were very excited about the show. So I don't think it's going to be one of these things where we're not allowed to let something slip or we're not allowed to put a little edge on things. I think, but as far as I know, there's not going to be any interference, and Jimmy and Hunter are running the show. I don't know exactly how it works. The idea 7, 8, and 9 were my idea, and 2, 3, and 4 were your idea, and the other ones were mutual. I mean, I don't know how that works, but I know that they both worked very well as a team, and that's just my overlying statement is Hunter Johnston I kind of get the idea that they think that Jimmy came in and took over everything Jimmy went out of his way not to take over stuff like that. He was very respectful. He was very respectful when Adam was in charge too. So.
Did you know the Sinclair guys? I mean, did they make their presence backstage at the iPay-per-view or, the ones who were there to watch? I mean, did they make their presence known or anything like that?
The only official is that there were a bunch of people that went. Supposedly they had a great time. Everybody was impressed. The only people that were around were Joe Koff and Gary Juster, and those are kind of the quote-unquote wrestling guys for Sinclair. But it wasn't like they were running around telling everybody what to do. They were basically just there for support and that kind of stuff. So, and Gary was just kind of watching everything, seeing how everything works, as far as I saw. And Joe was just basically, kind of super, like a supervisory type thing, just there if there were any questions but I think basically those guys are still getting their feet wet and still checking everything out. So, but it was, they were definitely a presence, but they weren't in anybody's way and they weren't, they weren't forceful by any means. They fit right into the machinery of the company. I didn't find them to be a nuisance. I found them to be a positive addition. No problems at all. So, but those are the only two that I saw. We saw a couple of guys that we had met over the weekend, but they just basically came in and said, "Hey guys, how you doing? Great show. Just want to say hello, congratulations, that kind of thing," and then in and out. But nobody hung around back, and it wasn't a bunch of people hanging around bothering everyone, nothing like that. So it was very, very smooth, very smooth.
Have you ever been to Baltimore before?
Had I ever been to Baltimore before? Yeah, we went to, we went on my wife and the kids went on vacation last year. We did Gettysburg, and then we did we went down to Maryland for a while. But and I think I drove through Baltimore very quickly, but I not because I was scared, just because I drove to Baltimore very quickly. But
I say you were on the west side, be scared.
Well, where that TV station was, I was a little nervous, but I
Road Hill Park.
It was well, you know, I live near a couple of cities over. You know, I live near Providence. I live near. It just kind of looked like a bigger Providence to me. So that stuff doesn't usually bother me. I first of all, I stay out of trouble, and second of all, I'm just not going to worry. You know, alert. You know, aware is one thing, but you know, I can't be on. I got enough problems. I can't be worrying about every single person that walks around. So, but it was fine. I mean, we got. You know, I went to a giant flea market over there. It was great.
They
didn't have
anything
I wanted.
Love those things there. Duck pin bowling too.
Oh yeah, well we have, you know, we have duck pin bowling up here too. We have candle pin bowling too. So
that's it. Yeah, see, the only two places I think on earth that it's that popular. But you know, growing up between the Baltimore and Washington area, I had a chance to go to a lot of shows in D.C. Had a chance to go to a lot more in Baltimore.
Right.
And obviously, you know, there's a legacy and a lore behind Baltimore as far as it being a great wrestling town.
Absolutely.
And that's true. It really is. It was a very passionate wrestling town. It's a town. Baltimore is a very odd, unique town with odd, unique people. John Waters, who obviously the director of you know, some of the wackiest movies you've ever seen in your entire
yep.
life. And there's
yep.
lots of wacky people that come out of Baltimore, but they put it, you know, for they won in the battle between the NWA and the WWF. The NWA marched into Baltimore and beat WWF like a drum. And obviously they
oh, yeah.
ran there, but they were – it's just a different group, and it's a group that seems to be – I was surprised it took Ring of Honor originally so long to come to Baltimore. I'm not sure what the issues were there, but it took them kind of a long time to go there. But can you see Baltimore being a great home base because being close to D.C., being close to Philly, you got a lot of colleges, you got a lot of – and again, it's a very odd, weird, unique town that would seem to take to something like that, and it's a city that once something becomes their own – it's their own. The Baltimore Colts marching band, there's a reason that was the first 30 for 30 on ESPN.
Right.
That's how loyal these people are. Did you get the feeling down there, or talking to Gary Juster and Cornette and some of the guys who are familiar with Baltimore,
sure.
does it look like it's going to be a good home base, and does it look like they're going to build there as far as really digging their hooks into the community?
Yeah, I mean, well, they, I know, obviously, since Sinclair is such a strong presence, that's right there, that's going to be the first signal that they're going to be a presence there. I mean, going to be outward towards it. I know we have a TV station there, obviously. I was standing in it. So I know they're going to have TV there. I know Baltimore is going to be an important city. I know they were, it was very, they didn't get into every specific town, but they were like, look at all these cool wrestling towns we have to run now. And look at all this stuff. Baltimore was one of the ones they mentioned. So that's why I think I agree with you. I think it's going to be a strong town for them to run. And I think it's only a matter of time. Like I said, I think the indication I got was that they wanted to make sure TV was going to go out real strong. You know, get a good strong taping in Chicago and then wherever the next taping is going to be, have that one be real strong and just get a lot of momentum going into the beginning of the year. You know, or at least towards the end, you know, the fall and the winter. So that was the indication I got. So it didn't, I'm sure they're exploring different things because they did have answers for different towns when it was brought up. But I'm not privy to all that information, so I know they're definitely it's on the slate. I just don't know exactly when they're going to do it, but I would assume they tackle Baltimore and run it at least a couple times a year because like you said, it's I don't know it as well as you do, but I'm aware of the history in Baltimore, and I think they should.
And
crazy
I gotta ask you, see, my final question for you will be this, because
sure.
you talked about at the beginning, and he's a name that it's like an Oz character. You know, growing up watching wrestling, and you hear names like, and I know Rich for you is probably guys like Fred Ward and guys, you know, along those lines, where Gary Juster. Elliot Murnick's another one, but Gary Juster has always been an Oz-like character. He was the one that brought wrestling to town. Gary Juster's brought this great, you know, show coming to the Baltimore Civic Center on this night. what was Gary Jester like? He's one of those guys that I got to meet before I die, because it's like, you know, he was always a name I'd always heard. I know kind of what he did. I'm sure he's got great stories. What was he like?
Gary? He was pretty, he was bigger than I thought he would be. He's a tall guy. well, I expect him to be this little mousy guy, you know, because when you, if you ever saw a glimpse of him, he had glasses and all that. Now he's kind of like, he's just like tall, lean guy, looked all business, very distinguished, came across as real professional, kind of like a senior, not old, but kind of like a senior member, senior as an experience, not a 95-year-old man. But kind of like a guy, like a just a wise guy that would, you felt very confident when they talked about him. And when people, I know a couple people had questions and he answered them, and you felt good about it. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to really talk to him too much. I did talk to him about, because I know they're running, they have a station in Portland, Maine, and there's a building I've wrestled in Portland, Maine that I like a lot. It's actually the building right next to the Portland Sea Dogs, which is the AA affiliate of the Red Sox. So it's the Portland Expo Center, and I think it's a great wrestling building, and it doesn't get run enough. But I think he wants to our TV slot isn't particularly strong there, so I think he wants to wait and see how it goes. But, you know, it was a good, intelligent answer, and it made a lot of sense, and I liked what he had to say. So it was cool because – you know, like, you know, I grew up about the same time you did, Mike, in wrestling, and you always heard about promoter Gary Jester, but you never knew what the heck he did, or you never knew what he was all about. And then here he is, and now you're working for him. You know, it's pretty cool. So, but yeah, he seemed like a real nice guy, very, very confident, very positive about the outlook of the company, and, you know, so very, very good, very good first impression.
Well, Bob, we definitely want to thank you for coming on with us tonight. I know it was kind of a surprise appearance, and you probably didn't expect to go this long, but we do appreciate you hanging around and answering a lot of questions. And I'm sure a lot of the fans were at least maybe still maybe had some questions, and maybe you've answered some of those. And I know everybody's looking forward to Ring of Honor getting back on television.
Yeah, guys, I'm excited about it. And if like I said, I'm on Twitter at Brutal Bob Evans, and you can find me on Facebook. I'm easy to find. So if anybody wants to ask me a question in private or I'll be happy to answer it to the best of my ability. Obviously, there's certain things that I'm not going to talk about, but I'm pretty open book, as you guys know, so I'll do my best to get any information out. I really want this to work. We need a third company. We need to get the guys busy and working again. We need to bring something to the fans, and I think this is our best bet. So we're asking everybody to jump on board, give Ring of Honor a good, solid chance, and I think they'll be excited about what we're going to put out, so... Look forward to it a lot.
Absolutely. Ring of Honor never, never disappoints. I want to thank you again for getting in here with us. And, of course, as always, we look forward to catching up with you again down the road, man.
Sure, guys. Have a good night.
All right,
you
man.
Too,
what's your
buddy. Hey, talk some sense into Ben, will you?
I'll do what I can. Take care,
thank
guys.
You.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care, man. Okay, once again, let me get it out there. Just, you know, our apologies for obviously some technical glitches tonight keeping us from getting some outside calls and making the board work the way we want to. So we just decided to go ahead and pull the segment with Jerry Jarrett tonight, but still trying to reschedule with him possibly as early as next week. So stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for that. However, I do have good news. We will not be backing off of the deal on the giveaway for the tickets for the premiere of Memphis Heat in Atlanta, which takes place. And as I'm building this up, if you want to have your chance at those, you need to either get your email ready to send to me or at rich@GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, or you need to get on Twitter at GWHTweets, or you need to get on the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com Facebook group, which you should know it. You should be a part of it. If you're not, why aren't you? Here's the question for this week, and the first person that answers this correctly will get two passes to one of the shows in the first weekend of August of Memphis Heat. Let's see, the first question is going to be, the first question was actually going to be one that I wanted Jerry here for, so we'll go ahead and go with this one. What wrestler did Jerry Jarrett name one of his dogs after? If you can be the first one to name that, Be the first one to name that. You'll get those two free tickets, and we'll hook up with you and get the details once we see that answer come across. Again, you can answer that at GWH Tweets at Twitter, the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com Facebook page, or via email, rich@GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Again, the question, what wrestler did Jerry Jarrett name one of his dogs after? It's going to be pretty interesting, and then, of course, we'll give that answer on the air next week and announce who the winners were. And we'll actually, you know, it's a good thing maybe that we got this one out of the way before Jerry's with us, because I really want to know the answer to how this came about. So great stuff there between you and Bob while I was trying to figure out the board. The bad thing is I don't think I figured out anything about the board. So,
well, you know, you're just saying that, too, about what wrestler did Jerry Jarrett name one of his dogs? I'm just thinking.
You can't answer.
You know, Les,
you can't answer. You're Les not eligible.
Oh, no, no, no. But I'm thinking Les had a bowel movement this morning and named it Santino Marella.
By the way, I did hear from Les while I was offline there. Les had some family drop by unexpectedly. And this is not anything on Les. I'm going to say this. If I had family drop by unexpectedly, it's probably the family I didn't care about, so I'm probably not answering the door. But anyway, and I sure hope that family, that part of the family was listening. Because they know who they are. They absolutely
We've
do.
All got
so,
them.
So UFC 132 happened over the weekend. I didn't get to that. Did you see it? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, if you had a chance to catch it in a replay, and I know that they do replay on Spike, and I'm sure on Versus at some point they'll do this too, but they replay old shows. If you get a chance to see this one, you know, watch it. It was very good. It's one of those things where it's like I'm sure a lot of people took a pass on it, but was it worth $45 or whatever it is, the $44.95. Yeah, absolutely, it was. This was Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber, who had fought a couple years ago now in WEC. Faber was arguably at the height of his game at 145 pounds, and Cruz was on his way up, had little training at that point. I don't want to say little training, but not anywhere in Faber's class, and Faber beat him in what was a good fight, but beat him decisively. Cruz was always upset going into that fight because basically when he came to the promotion of it, and he shouldn't be surprised by this, but it got under his skin that Faber was all of the promotion. He's the good-looking guy, the long, flowing hair, the chisel good looks, the California kid, you know, on and on and on and on, you know, American wrestling style and all that sort of stuff. He was really upset. To the point where when it came to autographs, if somebody handed him something to autograph, he would just do it right over Faber's face. And Cruz has just kind of held a grudge. And as Cruz has gotten better, Faber's run into some problems, ran into to Mike Brown, who he had big-time problems with first time around. Second time around, broke his hand, which obviously hurt him in that fight. But still, basically lost the decision. Found out 145, not good for him anymore. Dropped down to 135, and as he drops down to 135, during the last couple of years, Dominic Cruz has begun to dominate that division. A very wonky style, but solid punching, good on the ground, whole nine yards. It was going to be a real clash of, you know, of where these guys were going. Is Faber falling down that fast? Is Cruz really that good? How is this rematch going to go? It was a great fight. It was a very close fight. A lot of people were upset with the decision, which Dominic Cruz won a unanimous decision victory. I'm going to find the scores for you real quick, too, because a lot of people were really surprised that there were judges. The judge who had it, I believe it was 50-45. They ruled it a clean sweep for Dominic Cruz, and you look at that stat and you go, man, if you watch the fight, there's no way. But really, the rounds were so close, you could have called five rounds for Cruz. You couldn't have called five rounds for Faber, but you could have called five rounds for Cruz. I mean, I gave Uriah Faber the third round. Oh, no, what round did I give Faber? I gave Faber the first and the fourth. And the second and third were also very close. And in the fifth round, I think Cruz won. But even that, could, I guess, could be up for debate, too, but I don't think so. But And again, it was closer than the scores indicated. When you look at what kind of fight it was, because if this was ruled a draw, I wouldn't have been shocked. I really wouldn't have been, and it was a really fun, action-packed, exciting fight. No near-death moments or knockout blow moments or anything like that in that fight. But I tell you what, I'd watch it for a third time, and I'd pay money to see Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber probably quicker than I would pay money to see Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard for the third time, which is certainly going to be on pay-per-view. I don't think there's any way it's a pay-per-view main event unless you have a loaded undercard under it. But I tell you, Faber as a pay-per-view draw is there, and I think he's got the ability to be the UFC's Oscar De La Hoya in a way where, unless he's knocked out or unless he's embarrassed, which you got to remember, De La Hoya never was. There's a lot of ball busting on De La Hoya. He gave away the Trinidad fight. The two fights with Shane Mosley, again, they were close. I think I had won a draw, but you know, most people thought Mosley won both of those fights. He was never embarrassed. Beat Vargas in a great fight. Beat Corte in a great fight. There were other great fights out there, and it wasn't until he got laid to waste by Manny Pacquiao, you know, even Mayweather, even that fight, which was, you know, again, if you were there, you gave it to Mayweather, no problem. A lot of people on TV, me included, either had it a draw, but they didn't have De La Hoya winning. But me, Brian Kenny, Thomas Umstead, there were people that watched it on TV that thought it was close enough to be a draw. Well, it wasn't until he got blown out by Pacquiao where it's like, okay, it's over. I don't think people are going to buy it anymore. And he knows that. He retired and is done with it. And Faber's got that same sort of thing, I think. It's not going to be, obviously, to the level of De La Hoya's numbers, but I think it is possible that he can be there, De La Hoya, and that he can always probably get 400,000 buys for the most part, because I think they can grow him and people will like him. I mean, he was doing AMP commercials and doing some other stuff as a member of WEC. He's a marketable guy, and I know a lot of people won't like that. They won't like the fact that he's lost his last couple title opportunities, but there's one of the unfair things about getting busy on the canvas mat, pro wrestling, boxing, kickboxing, even to a point amateur wrestling and judo and karate. It's just one of those things that you got to suck it up. There are just some guys that people want to see in situations. And again, I don't think it's so far out of the realm of possibility that Faber doesn't deserve another title shot. You know, I don't think it's to that level, so I don't think people can bitch too much. But even if it wasn't the case, if that's what people want to see, tough. That's what people want to see. You know, in 2005, it was Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock. Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock, who had been fighting in the UFC for years, it was them who, you know, got the whole thing with the Ultimate Fighter going and got, you know, a lot of the eyeballs on it. I mean, sometimes there are just those guys where there were probably two other guys going, that should be us. We're the future. That's not the way it works all the time. And I think Uriah Faber, I can't wait to see this fight again. I don't think it's going to happen in a rematch. Cruz has got other guys that he needs to fight. But speaking, by the way, I said there were no big, great knockout moments in this fight or anything like that, and I brought up Tito Ortiz's name. The rest of this show was filled with guys either getting knocked out or getting choked out. Tito Ortiz, at 36 years old, he wasn't even the gatekeeper anymore. It wasn't like Tito's going to hold the door for the next guy coming in. He was only going to do it to Ryan Bader, and then his career, the guillotine would have come down, he would have been done. Well, it took all of, I'm trying to think of what it was, about a minute and a half. Ortiz, just, who looked, by the way, like $1 million, and I'm not just saying that because he tweeted that naked picture of himself, but on Twitter, but Ortiz looked great. He really looked fantastic. Caught Bader, choked him out. Bader coming off the loss to John Jones. I don't know if he just got caught by Tito and got really surprised and got, you know, a tight arm in guillotine and just couldn't break out of it. An embarrassing situation, obviously, for Bader, who basically went from a number one contenders match and getting choked out by John Jones to a fight that basically he was supposed to win. It was supposed to be a nice notch on his post, and unfortunately, it didn't work out that way for him, and Ortiz wins. Again, the rest of the card, there were some nasty knockouts and some really nasty fights. Matt Wyman and Dennis Seaver got into a great bloody fight, and again, a really close back-and-forth action fight. Some controversy there over who people thought would win. I had Wyman actually winning barely, 29-27. But that's another fight that went Seaver's way, but how people can complain about it too much, I don't know. I'd like to see that one in a rematch. Wanderlei Silva and Chris Leben. You knew somebody was going to get knocked out. It was a matter of when, and it was a matter of who. I thought actually Silva would hit. Basically, and Leben's got an incredible chin, and Wanderlei doesn't, but I just thought Wanderlei would be just heavy-handed enough in an exchange to catch Leben and knock him out. That did not happen. Chris Leben knocked Wanderlei Silva out in about 30 seconds. Caught him with a left, and then caught him with a couple uppercuts, left uppercuts. Dropped Silva, knocked Silva out so cold, and the referee went in to break it up. Silva just had instinct, started to triangle the referee. Wanderlei Silva's career is over unless you can do a gimmicky fight at a catchweight against Akiyama in Japan or something like that. I mean, that is about the only thing you can do with him. And, you know, Wanderlei Silva, I think he just turned 35. He's a very, very old, ancient 35-year-old. And in the UFC, and Joe Rogan did a very good job in bringing up Silva's past. One thing they did not bring up is there was no drug testing in Japan. He was fighting Japanese guys. And look, there's a reason he was doing that. One, I'll say this about steroids and performance-enhancing drugs. If you go fight in a place where they are legal, I'm not going to say I wouldn't do it. If I wanted to be the pinnacle of the sport I was in, if they're not testing for it, you know, sorry, it's like the cream and the queer and all of these other things. I mean, there's always going to be, you always try to build a better mousetrap, but, you know, athletes are athletes. They're able to get away with it now. So in a place where it's open season and everybody's doing it, I'm not saying that's right because everybody's doing it, but I am saying if you're going to be in that business and you're going to take the abuse you're going to from guys who are doing it, you probably want to think about it. I'm not saying I can't say I wouldn't do it, but, you know, Silva, you know, is fighting guys a lot smaller than him too oftentimes. Guys like Tamura and Sakuraba, obviously, and Ninawa and guys like that where, I mean, he was literally almost knocking guys' heads off, and he, you know, comes to the UFC, he's got to get smaller. And it's a little bit of a different ballgame. They never brought any of that up, which kind of made me chuckle a little bit because they were doing such a good job and really making you believe that this warhorse has got a veteran of 45 fights at only 35 years old, and most of them in Brazil and in Japan where he was just getting killed. They did a great job in trying to hype him up, but that's it for Wanderlei Silva, and it really is too bad in a way. But I guess, you know, he had a chance to make his money. He had a chance to come to the UFC. He did get some wins, or come back to the UFC. I mean, because that's the fight that put Vitor Belfort on the mat, and I don't know if people, Rich, if you had ever seen her or not, but it was the Ultimate Brazil Show years ago for the UFC where Belfort and Silva come out, and they just start throwing blows on each other. And Silva had this, you know, he's got this gorilla style of the way he throws punches and the way he would come out. And Vitor Belfort just punched him literally with Silva's head going with it all the way back up against the other side of the cage and ended up knocking him out in just an all-time highlight reel UFC moment. So, and he gets back in the UFC, does get some wins, you know, it does get the respectability. And, I mean, he was the axe murderer. He was the Japanese killer. He was the hated heel, respected but a hated heel. That's what he was supposed to be in Japan. And he turned his career around in a way and his image around where he's just the happy good guy now. And he didn't want to fight Brian Stann because he didn't want to fight an American hero. And, you know, he's a different guy, an all-shucks guy, wants to get around with everybody. Didn't like what Chael Sonnen said about Brazilians, even though he's trying to sell the fight. Wasn't respectful. And it's just kind of funny to see how his career has changed, and I hope he has had a chance to save his money and do all that stuff, and he won't be fighting on smaller shows anywhere else because he needs the bucks, because I think he did a hell of a job basically not turning his image around, because it's not like it was a real thing. It was a created thing, but I think they did a hell of a job with that. And even though he goes out with a nasty knockout to Leben, at least it was a highlight reel thing he gets to put on his resume too, even though it's a negative as far as the action he gave UFC fans and mixed martial arts fans. So that was the show. And again, if you have a chance to catch a replay and can spare the money, do it. If you get a chance to see it on Spike in a couple months, seriously, watch the show, because from top to bottom, it was really entertaining. Knockouts on the undercard. The undercard that wasn't televised was awful. As soon as it got on Spike TV, it kicked ass and took names and just kept rolling throughout the whole thing. So good on the UFC. And again, when you have a B show that surprises, when you have a B show that is people, well, I don't know if I want to spend $45, but then they hear about it being good. I mean, it's good all the way around. And it proves you got to go all out, balls out all the time when it comes to these shows, at least to the best of your ability as far as planning them and trying to really put on a good foot, because even when you're down, the word gets out that the UFC becomes something you can't miss, and that just builds it, even if it's only 50,000 people the next time for a B-show, you know, quote-unquote like this one, and it goes from 400,000 buys to 450,000 buys. That's still 50,000 buys at $50. And, you know, TNA can get sometimes only 8,000 buys, whatever it is, $30. So, you know, good on the UFC.
Great stuff, as always, from Mike Sempervivi.
And I'm out of air. Jesus, my Lord.
Yeah, let me say this. I was wondering, I had some oxygen ready to throw your way. You know, we for those who don't know, we pay Mike for the word. We pay him by the word. So... we actually have a counter that sits here never mind. Anyway.
Speaking of the old school, by the way, Jim Cornette again. You know, for us, he taught me everything. Jim Cornette taught me linguistics.
So nobody's got the answer right yet. Nobody's jumping on Facebook or Twitter on this thing. Somebody needs to get it. Hearing great things about this stuff. I've seen a couple emails and a couple tweets that were wrong. Keep trying. You'll get it. It's not that hard. I'm betting. I also want to thank Mark James from MemphisWrestlingHistory.com for providing us some questions, because I wanted to make sure that we got questions and answers that would be legitimate and good, solid answers for no room for argument. If we're going to go somewhere with Memphis, let's go with Mark James. Of course, he is the man to go to there. He provided us with those, and I am guessing that the answer to this question is probably in that book. Probably.
I would figure. I know. I've heard, you know, that he did. I don't think I know the name, so I want to know this one too.
Let's
actually,
I'll put a little teaser out, because bottom line is we're going to give these tickets away. So the thing is, who are we going to give them to? So let's try to give them to the listeners. For being faithful and listening to us, I'll go ahead and give you a hint. I have said on record many times before that this is one of the most underrated. Let's see, I don't want to narrow it down too much and make it too easy, but I have often said this person was very underrated at their role. And let me just leave it at that.
All right.
I've gone on record on various message boards, various posts, and various radio shows. So, yeah, it's out there. So, let's see. You know, somebody had a bad week. And besides our board, Brett Rogers. Things not going well for Mr. Rogers.
Strike
Force let him go. And
well, when you pull on your wife, he allegedly, obviously,
allegedly.
Right now, allegedly did. Well, that's what happens. It's not because the UFC bought Strikeforce or anything like that. Just he would have been fired no matter what the situation. It's a sad situation. It's just he, a promising career. I mean, very young. I know a lot of people just kind of turn their nose up now because, you know, he did get beat by Fedor and losing in the tournament in the way that he did. It's like, you know, the guy only had, I think it was like 7-8 fights before he knocked out Andre Arlovsky for Strikeforce. He was not, he wasn't put in there to be a bag, you know, or a cam. He was going to be a live opponent, but obviously everybody thought Arlovsky was going to win that fight. Nobody knew who he was. He'd only had a couple fights. Nobody knew how well-trained he was or anything. And he gets a big knockout over Arlovsky, and then, you know, people, of course, then shoot him to the moon in everybody's minds. He's like the next thing. He's not, because it's really early in his career. And he had a long way to go. And he could still, I guess, have a long way to go. It's just... it's probably not going to be on a top scale, and obviously there have been athletes and actors and everything else aplenty who have had spousal abuse charges and, you know, been able to come back out of it. I mean, look at the NFL. I mean, there's too many examples out there. With that said, you know, with fighting, with still trying to get in New York, and you still have, you know, donkeys up there saying, oh, what are we going to do, give them clubs and bats next, and they can just beat each other? It's like, you know, and that's how outdated it is. But, you know, you're not going to have the chances. Rampage Jackson running over that pregnant woman, I think, in a way, that was one of the last things like that where everybody's got a story. You know, read Jonathan Snowden's Total MMA books. Or a lot of the history books. I mean, there are a lot of not nice guys who are in fighting. It's fighting. You're getting punched in the face for a living. You sometimes they're not the sanest, normalest people in the world. You know, people like Mick Foley are the exception to the rule in any, you know, sport or situation where you get bounced on your head for a living, for God's sakes. But, you know, that's it. There's too many eyeballs on the UFC. There's too many contracts at play. There's too many things going on where, you know, Brett Rogers, if it's Brock Lesnar, I mean, and again, bad example, and I'm just throwing out a name, not saying anything, I'm just throwing out name, but Brock Lesnar, you pick Randy Couture. Not Randy Couture, is retired now, but you know what I mean, John Jones, any of those guys. You know, something happens when that, even that's a little bit different, but for there's guys like Brett Rogers, I mean, I'm sorry, you're expendable, and he probably just, I don't know, if he didn't kill his career, because I don't know what else he could do. I mean, you can still be a fighter in a lot of places and make quick cash doing it. It may not be all that much, but it really, as far as his chances of getting back in any time soon and hopefully and training at the top, I don't know if he's going to have that opportunity. And on top of all the bad part about, you know, the spousal abuse charges and stuff like that, what he just did to his career and his possibilities was just, you know, you just the screwed up and, you know, the rage and whatever it was. I know there was, I think he was drinking and everything else. It was just a bad scene, obviously, and this is what resulted from it. He really, his reputation, obviously, now shot. You know, nowhere near Casey Anthony level, but, you know, the reputation for the time being is shot, and his career, as far as being a key guy and the only company essentially going, is just probably won't be back, and he really hurt himself, so as much as damage as he caused everybody else to, really screwed up.
All right, so anyway, anything coming up this weekend? I mean, we know Ring of Honor's got the Charlotte and Richmond events. Nothing on the MMA front in terms of at least the majors there. What else?
Yeah, Bellator, I guess, is going to be on M2, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to think what I don't have in front of me right now, but I believe Bellator's running on M2. And those, you know, I tell you what, those shows have been pretty damn good, too. I'm not even sure if there's any major boxing or anything like that. I know there's a couple of boxing shows coming up, but I'm not sure if there's anything major or anything like that. It's just really, you know, I'm going to watch SmackDown on Friday. I stayed away from any spoilers or anything like that when you can go Raw this week. I haven't seen them for SmackDown either, so I'm going to watch that show. And again, just kind of wait on Monday. This is the show. I mean, they had to tape last week's show. It was a weird. I tell you what, didn't you love when the plane landed live? And it's like, it's 9:30 on the East Coast and there's still a little bit of light. You're telling me it's in Vegas at 6:30, you know, it's pitch black, but hey, you know. So,
hopefully the SmackDown crew doesn't get anything more stolen out of the luggage racks over there. One other thing that is going on this weekend, obviously, TNA, Destination X, you know, for what that's worth.
Oh, God, I forgot that. Damn, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that said something.
Yeah. Abyss and Brian Kendrick. There you go.
I don't know what else you can say to that, really.
Well, you know, here's the matches of the night. You know, the Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, that ought to be great. Jerry Lynn, Rob Van Dam, I would expect a good match there. Kazarian, Samoa Joe, Maybe. Abyss and Kendrick? Oh, God bless America.
I just, you know, Abyss and Kendrick, it's such a joke, and I don't know if this is, I don't know if Kendrick will somehow go over or something like, for some reason, I just see somebody showing up to get in that to beat Abyss. Yeah, after he beats Kendrick or something like that. They've only got 5 matches, and obviously some of these matches are going to go for a while. I mean, RVD and Jerry Lynn, you know, I'm sure Jerry Lynn, if Jerry Lynn was not in good enough shape to do this, he would not be doing it. And he is very, very good. And he and Rob Van Dam know each other very, very well. I mean, ECW 90, so good, 8, 9, I'm trying to think when the TNN deal, you know, leading into that, I mean, they lost a bunch of guys too. And that they were put in a position where RVD and Jerry Lynn was one of the wrestling feud, quote unquote, that was going to carry them as they, you know, plugged along and tried to figure their stuff out. And so that match should be good because they know each other so well. And again, Rob Van Dam is a guy that, you know, Sting doesn't have good matches with Rob Van Dam. AJ Styles can have good matches with Rob Van Dam. You know, Jeff Hardy and RVD was one of the smart things WWE did, WWF did during the invasion. Putting those two together, it worked out great. So because they know each other very well, that should be pretty good. Samoa Joe and Kazarian, you know, they had teased initially that you're going to see Daniels, AJ, Joe, who have had 2 great matches with the 3 of them in the ring, will change somebody's mind on 3-way matches when those 3 do, because they're just so damn good together, and they've been doing it for so long. They've been doing it since Ring of Honor days and California days, if I'm not mistaken, when they came to Daniels and Joe. So they know each other great, and it's disappointing that that's not on there. I'm holding out hope for Joe and Kazarian. I think it's going to be pretty good, just not as good as it should have been if Joe was in there with Daniels and AJ, which, even without Joe, is probably going to be the best match on the show. Going to be interesting to see. I'm not sure how it's going to work with who they're dropping into the 4-way. I guess that's going to be figured out on Thursday. Austin Aries, Shima Zion, who is a... He would be your sports entertainer. he wrestles in... he's been wrestling around for a bunch of different promotions, most notably featured right now in Evolve, I think. He is basically, not to say his bread and butter, but that would be considered his home base. And yeah, a talented guy, you know, still a long, long, long way to go, but, you know, at least in a way it's a different face on the show, at least for a little while. Austin Aries, Zima Ion, and Loki, and an opponent to be named later. So Loki... Yeah, I don't do backflips over him. He takes himself way too seriously. But hey, you know, there's lots of people that like him, and he could probably kick the hell out of me, so I'm not going to say anything about it. Plus, I love his matches with Este Rios on Jacked and Metal and all those other WWF shows when they flood those. The dying days of syndication before Ring of Honor brought it back this year.
Probably could kick the shit out of you, and probably actually would.
I think you want to, because I've been doing bad imitations of him for years, and I'm sure he's probably heard them.
well, you're all over the freaking place. Of course he has. All right, so what else we got? We got a lot of wrong answers coming in on this trivia question. I'm going to put this out one more time.
Now, what's been the best wrong answer so far, Rich? Please.
Well, you know, nothing that's like so far god awful bad. You know, like a lot of the Memphis faithful I'm seeing. You know, a lot of the old standbys from Memphis. Keep trying.
Somebody screwing up and like just thinking Portland. Is it Rip Oliver? Like, that's what I was hoping for, at least something wacky like that.
Well, it wasn't Lance Russell. I'll put it that way.
As they, because Lance Russell, I tell you what, I've been one of the most underrated guys ever.
Or Dave Brown. Dave Brown, that's a guy we got to have on the show.
Actually, yeah, I would love to have him on.
That would be phenomenal. That would be awesome.
Lance played the straight man. Lance knew what the hell was going on a lot of it. Obviously, not 100% of the time, but he knew the layout. Dave Brown was actually the ultimate straight man, because I don't know, like, Bob Cowell did the weather, but did the play. I mean, he was in that vein of, like, sometimes I don't know what the hell is going on here.
Watching Memphis wrestling was always entertaining. I'll just leave it at that. It was always entertaining. Good wrestling from time to time. Sometimes it was, is this really happening? You know, here's what I remember from Lance. Oh, come on now.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You can't do that. That was the best. That was the best stuff. It was like listen to my uncle across the room or something, you know. I love that stuff. It was great. Absolutely.
It's just the everyman, and he knew how to play it. He was just so great. He was a fantastic straight man. Dave Brown, I liked even more when he would be there. They would be doing something two man where there would be guys there, because it was just like Lance is saying, "Oh, come on," and Dave's just thinking, you know, at least pulled it off very well. Like, you know, with a smile on his face and just like, okay, where's my escape here when stuff starts going down?
Okay, we do have an answer that has come in. Going off the hint I gave about somebody being underrated, Steve Olsonowski came in. I will say this. Yes, as underrated as he was, he was not the name of Jerry Jarrett's dog. Good try, though. You're on the right track, at least in terms of, I guess, at least kind of having a clue and actually knowing. Of course, I know this guy personally, so I'm sure he remembers that from conversations past. So anyway, keep trying, folks. We'll put that question up again in the news story and make sure that if somebody doesn't get it immediately tonight, well, at least during the course of the week, somebody will get it, I'm sure. And we'll be able to announce that here next week, who won, and we'll also have the next question next week. So we'll just kind of continue this all the way through July, right up until the first weekend in August. I believe we got 10 tickets total we're giving away. So keep trying to get in here and get some of these questions. Anything else we need to hit before we wrap up tonight?
No, I got one question for you, though.
Uh-oh.
This is Steve-O, actually. I remember Steve-O being pushed a little bit more in the AWA. Remember him when I was, you know, watching Georgia 2 in the Zbyszko era. The time he was there was used as one of the touring guys as far as the All-Star show that they did, the Jarrett Georgia combined show that they tried to put together for a while. I think Les did some of the announcing for. What did you ever think? Because I remember, and obviously being a kid at the time, there were guys like him and a few others where it's like they weren't. You knew as a fan and as a kid, it was like they weren't going to get beat up like the Mulkeys or you know Mike Jackson, or actually Mike Jackson a little bit different in your territory, but guys like that you knew they weren't going to get beat. You know, it's almost like the Jay Strongbow types. They were going to put somebody over that was going to go over the top, but. You know, what did you think of Steve-O? Because I remember liking him, but I was a kid at the time where it was just like, okay, he's good, but obviously he's not as good as these guys, but he's not some jobber, or he's not some guy going to get beat up. What was your opinion? Because you were down there, and what's the feeling on Steve-O down there?
Well, I think it's clear watching him. I mean, he was a student of Vern Gagne. I mean, I think he was better than a lot of people give him credit for. He was pretty damn solid in the ring from what I remember of him. And even going back and looking at, you know, YouTube stuff here and there when I get the chance to see him, you know, up until the time he hurt his wrist, I thought, you know, other than the fact that the guy has very little charisma, natural charisma, I mean, the guy has the look, he's got the skills in the ring, you know, he can at least be the credible Bob Backlund type guy. You know, maybe not as talented as a Backlund, but kind of that mold, if you get where I'm coming from. And
oh, absolutely, because that was what
for them.
Like,
for the what's that?
I was saying that's the thing. Cause when he's a pretty good looking guy, you know, had a good smile, could wrestle. Like, you know, it's dumb as that sounds, stuff like that. But yeah, he didn't have like that pop. But you looked at him, and it's like there was something special there. And again, not to try and dismiss him or anything.
Well,
I was actually curious.
Yeah, well, you know, they put the national title on him, you know, a lot of people these days, at least in recent years, I've seen a lot of people kind of question that move, but, you know, it really made sense for where he was in the company at the time. I thought it was great. You know, they put him over Mongolian Stomper. There was a little bit of a non-clean finish to the mix, which I didn't really like. But, you know, bottom line is they put the title on him. That right there says at least that, you know, we believe the guy has credibility. Let's give him the title. That was the top title in the company at the time. And, you know, he got to wear it for a while. And, unfortunately, like I say, he hurt his wrist and he ended up having to back off wrestling, ended up doing a little work at the podium with Gordon Soley for a while, and surprisingly, I thought he did pretty well with that, doing the analysis stuff, but it was just, in terms of giving a promo, he just couldn't do it. He just could never deliver there, so he was never going to be, you know, the top dog or anything, but in terms of credibility, I think he looked credible as a wrestler.
And that was the thing, too, that, God, at that time, things were changing where you had big mouth plus three promo guys, and, you know, not to say that, you know, obviously Georgia's everywhere always had a good cachet of them, but it was becoming more style than substance, and that page was turning there, too. So, you know, imagine him. He's one of those guys who was probably 10 years earlier, probably would have been in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, you know, we've been trying to get Steve-O on the show for a while now. He, unfortunately, really doesn't do these kind of things, and I know he's coming down for the Fan Fest in Atlanta. So I hit him up recently to see if he'd do something with us prior to his appearance here. Unfortunately, he's just not committed to it. So hopefully, you know, we'll keep trying. We'll keep trying to get him on here because I think he's probably got some good stuff to talk about. You know, I mean, let's face it. Where he trained, where he learned the craft, I think he's probably got a lot to offer in terms of stories and what he could probably teach a lot of the younger guys today, too.
Hey, get Gary Oates over here, threaten him a little bit, smack him around.
Yeah, there you go.
Strong arm him into doing it.
Speaking of Jerry Oates, tomorrow night they will be on Peach State Pandemonium. They will be talking about wrestling family. And
ooh,
there's like no end in sight to that. Yeah, that could be fun. You know, of course, the bad thing is if they get stuck on like the Welch, Fields, Fuller, whatever the hell thing, they may never get to any other family. So, you know, I don't know. They maybe need to hold that off, do its own show. Everybody else in another show.
It really, God, yeah, the Fields and Welch and Fuller, gee, yeah, that you can't go into them. It's too long. It feels like the Samoan tree is a little long too, even though none of them are truly connected.
Yeah, I figure you can expect some discussion on people like the Armstrongs, the Ortons, people like that, Valentines, whatnot.
You get the Gouldies in there a little bit.
Sure. All right. Well, I guess that's probably going to do it for us here tonight. Nobody came in with the right answer while we're on the air, and hopefully we get Les back here next week. And like I say, stay tuned to see if we get rescheduled with Jerry for next week. We really hope to have him here next week. I know we were looking forward to having Jake Roberts on next week, as we've announced, but he's flexible, and we'll see if maybe we can get Jerry in here. I want to get Jerry in here quickly because I want to get to talking about that book, and I really want to have him in here when we talk about this dog answer. So anyway, Mike,
speaking of books, too, because I don't read Jerry Jarrett's book, but just so everybody knows, if you go to PlayboyGaryHart.com, I think it is, or GaryHart.com, his book is back available for sale. I want to thank Court Bauer, who I think we've talked to on this show before, too, for putting that or helping to re-release that book. I'm not sure how many of the copies are going to be, Rich. I'm going to get you one, definitely. Great book there, obviously.
I'm sorry, did you say you're getting me one?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are a sweetheart. For all those words I paid you for, you're going to do that.
And I tell you, nice notes on the website from Gary Hart's kids, too. Obviously, Jerry Jarrett's not going to want to hear this. We talked about Gary Hart's in his book about Jerry Jarrett, and I'm sure Jerry Jarrett in his book has probably got some ideas on what took place in Georgia when he was there, too. But two great guys who I respect a lot, who I have always been fascinated with, for two different reasons. I'm sure two great books. One for sure because I read it. Gary Hart's already awesome. And Jerry Jarrett, I know I'm going to love too. So awesome stuff.
Cool stuff. And I'll be at the mailbox. What do you got coming up this week, man?
Hopefully. Jeez, it's been so damn long, man. Adam Summers and
another
I.
Another big audio nightmare.
We haven't done one. I can't tell you when the last time we've done one. I keep hyping up that we're going to do one. I still have not had time, unfortunately, to do one. But, yes, hopefully, maybe, possibly, the Big Audio Nightmare is going to be recorded tomorrow night. Should be actually up on the site, WrestlingObserver.com, tomorrow night. And then with Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Live Sunday on the Sports Byline Radio Network, Series Channel 92, Sundays from 6 to 8. just check out the main page at the WrestlingObserver.com website throughout the day, basically starting about 1 p.m. Eastern time. Figure out how to call in or write into that show too. So I think that's all I got going on outside of the real job, which pays the rent and it drives me insane.
There you go. All right. Let's see. We've already talked about Peach State Pandemonium. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night for those guys at 8 p.m. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for all your news, notes, and any other just miscellaneous bullshit. And follow us on Twitter. Join us on Facebook. Something like that. Maybe we'll have Les back with us next week. We'll see. And maybe he'll unveil his Twitter. I noticed, Mike, that you finally broke down and got a Facebook account.
I tell you, 2011, I'm really busting it into 2005 now. I got a Twitter account and a Facebook account now.
There you go. Did you put the MySpace
away?
If anyone's
ever curious to what I look like, you just go to the Facebook.com. I think that's how it works, / Michael Sempervivi. And you can see my ugly face, but you can also see the face of the child who amazingly, thank God, looks like his mother because he's just gorgeous, but you get to see him too, so there you go. And obviously twitter.com/SemperVivi, twitter.com/GWHTweets, and Rich, I know they got your account too for Facebook, so yes, we are fully accessible in 2011.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it here for us this week. We'll see you here again next week, and we're going to try to play the outro and see how this goes. And that's all. All right, we're out of here. Good night.